The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening and welcome back. And I think a few people are still coming in. So, as we did before, if you have any questions or comments, reports about meditation that you'd like to bring up here at the beginning, it'd be great to hear them. Any questions about the instructions or your experience? Any challenges or benefits? Yes, here, can you?
I'm just finding it hard to incorporate meditation regularly into my daily life. I was doing very good the first couple of weeks, and then now I'm, you know, up doing my routine, or I'm too busy, or I forget, and then it's time to go to bed, and I'm tired, and so I'm having a challenge with incorporating a regular routine.
Okay. Yeah, it's a common challenge people have until they get into a habit of it. At some point, it becomes if you kind of make some effort, a little bit of discipline, at some point it becomes a habit, and then it becomes a natural part of your life, and you wouldn't think not doing it. But it's a common issue. A couple of things that you could try. One is that I know some people have had a lot of success that every day they're committed to at least getting into the meditation posture. Just that. And even if it's, you know, and most people, if you just get in the posture, like, it only has to be like 3 seconds. But most people, if they really get themselves into the meditation posture, say, well, you know, I could sit here probably for 3 more seconds, or 10 seconds, or a minute. It's okay. I have time for a minute. When I was a monk, I worked in the monastery kitchens for a year. And the meals had to be, it was a Zen monastery where things have to be very, very regulated. So the meals had to be served, you know, exactly at the right time, I mean, like by the minute. Because everything was choreographed in kind of religious way. And so lunch was the big meal of the day, and we would, you know, always a push to get the lunch out just on time and just right. But always, I think it was 15 minutes before lunch was served up, everyone in the kitchen had to stop and go to this little kitchen altar and chant for about 3 minutes together. And I was, for a while, I was the kind of kitchen manager, like running the kitchen. And I couldn't believe it. We're stopping now? Every time, right? Now we don't have time to stop. We're just getting out the meal. But you had to. It was, you know, in Zen, you have to do what you say. And so, and it seemed like after we chanted, we always had more time. It seemed like everything worked out. And this is what I found for myself, that when I am really busy and feel harried by too many things to do, that's one of the best times for me to sit down and meditate, because those are the times I tend to magically have more time afterwards, because time is partly a construct of the mind. Anyway, just sit down, even if it's 3 seconds. Get in the posture and see what happens. The other thing that some people find successful is it's too much to commit to sit every day, you know, without any break. But they might commit to sit, meditate 5 days a week. 5 times a week, but it doesn't have to be on 5 separate days. So you try to do 5 separate days, but if you miss a day, you know, then you do 2 the next day, or 3 on the weekend or something, just to kind of get those 5, and have that kind of flexibility. Some people find helpful. Other people find that kind of flexibility is a disaster. You know, some people they need to have real clear discipline. This is what I do, and no question asked. So I don't know how you are. But, you know, give it a chance, because what some people find is that after they get into it, they can't imagine a day without it, because the day just goes so much easier. So those are some thoughts. Yes. Hold it closer.
The idea you expound, you presented the idea one or two nights ago that we are not the same as our thoughts. All right, so if we sweep aside the thoughts, how do we determine or how do we identify, without using words, who we are?
Mm-hmm. What's the need?
Well, the way that you put it was that we are not our thoughts, so if we're not our thoughts, what are we?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm asking respectfully, but what's the need to know?
I have to think about that.
Yes, it might be more interesting for me to answer the question once you have a clear sense of the need. And until there's a need, you're free. You're free of that definition. Maybe later in the evening you'll have thought about it. What? A little too deep. Okay, well, here's a fifth class.
So the last, when we did the session on the emotions, That session was really hard for me.
Yes.
And so I thought when we did this session on the thoughts, it was going to be a lot easier than the one about emotion. Only the emotions grabbed me again. I mean, right. I wasn't watching any boats. They were attacking.
they were coming on land.
Well, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm kidding, but I'm not really.
I understand.
And both of the guided sessions last time, they were really hard for me.
Yes, I can understand.
So, do you remember we talked about the? What I'm asking is, what do I do if it feels like the feelings are all over me and I wasn't expecting to have them? I had no idea they were there.
Right.
I might have a general awareness that they're there now because This has happened often now. But this experience is unique to guided meditation for me.
Okay.
I can cry and be sad in my own meditation sometimes or have no idea I was.
Right.
And I can identify various emotions and, ones that don't fit together, really. Right. I do that when I'm out of meditation, too. But in here, guided meditation, it seems to be more effective for me, or I go deeper.
Yeah.
And it's really scary.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do I do when that happens?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So one of the things is sometimes it's more important to know how to come out of the depths than it is to go in.
Yeah.
So if you start feeling you're going deeper than you feel comfortable with, that's the time actually to pull out and just kind of go back into a normal state of mind, maybe open your eyes, look around, and get stabilized again. And then you can go down again. As soon as you start feeling uncomfortable, come out. And what that does, after a while you get confident, you know how to pull out. And then you might be willing to go deeper. Because it's okay, I can go a little bit further, I can explore this. I can get to know this and make space for this because I know it's safe for me to pull out. So you want to develop that confidence.
And you said something else about being loving with yourself.
Being in love?
Being loving with yourself?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit more
about it? It's a very, very important thing. So some people, especially if there's going to be a lot of challenging emotions, some people find it's really good to do what's called loving kindness meditation, where it's a meditation where you cultivate friendliness towards yourself and towards others, but friendliness towards oneself. Some people will start every meditation session with 5 minutes or so of what's called loving-kindness meditation, where you genuinely try to find a way to give yourself love, compassion, caring, well-wishing, kind of friendliness. And that kind of sets kind of a friendly, safe kind of mental space, mental attitude for experiencing what's difficult. Because then you can be friendly to it rather than being aversive to it or angry or ashamed or many things that can happen.
But doing that,
you can't really do that in the middle. It's better.
You can.
You can do it.
You can.
So if I am having if the boat jumps me again,
yeah,
then I can do that or
yes,
come out of it?
Yes. Yeah, and some people find that switching what they're doing from being present for it, sometimes really strong emotions is too much for sometimes to be present for.
Yeah.
And so you want to change what you're doing. And one way is to pull out. Another is to change the meditation you're doing to doing this loving kindness meditation.
Yeah, that's in a way that seems more effective because the other one just seems like,
yeah,
well, now I have to worry about what's down there.
Right, right.
And I have to go back there again.
Yeah.
And staying present, yeah, for it in some way that works or,
yeah,
keeps things a little,
yeah,
calmer.
Yeah. So imagine that there's a, 2-year-old girl who comes in here and she's really afraid, really distraught, and she comes up to you. What would you do for her? What would you do?
Uh-huh.
And you wouldn't rationalize with or use logic with a 2-year-old.
No.
And would you do anything that makes her feel like you want to get rid of how afraid she is?
No, I probably thought it was okay.
Yeah. So that kind of attitude that you do for sometimes, you're friendly, you help, you hold it with compassion, with care, it's,
yeah,
okay. Is one of the purposes of this loving kindness meditation. So it's okay. And one of the things we're trying to do in deep meditation with these, like fear comes up, is to help the fear feel safe.
Good. It's hard.
It is hard. It's very hard. So you take your time. There's no hurry. So remember, you can just be on the edges. So another thing that people do with strong emotions, if they're here like they are now for you, is you know what the street out here is like, right? You've been to this, you're in Hopkins. If you stood on the other side of the street and looked at yourself, you think you can manage to be kind of more relaxed and present for your fear? Is that far enough away that you can kind of be with it without being swept away? You imagine yourself looking from that distance?
I don't know.
How far away do you have to be, you think, so you can kind of be far enough away from your fear that you're willing to stay present for it? Like, you think if you were down by the train tracks?
I think what I'm realizing is I want it to go away so badly that,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what the distance is, right?
Mm.
So I'm fighting it rather than,
yeah,
having it.
So you don't think that you can... How about up there on the skyline? If you were down there and looking down all the way down to Redwood City, and somewhere down there, you see yourself.
Yeah.
Because some people find it effective to be, if they want to try to be present, to imagine themselves and far, far away, like bird's eye view, and then they can offer a kind of, from a distance, a kind of kind, simple presence without kind of getting too,
yeah,
distraught by it. If you want, but there's no requirement to do this. There's no obligation here. No requirement. So you can, if you start feeling afraid, you can always stop the meditation. You can always open your eyes. You can always take a deep breath and start over. And it's actually it's very important that you develop that confidence.
Okay.
But what I can tell you is that what you're experiencing is fine. And no, it's difficult, but it's fine. And slowly over the time, you'll learn how to hold that compassionately. It's okay. And help your fear feel safe.
Okay. Thank you.
Behind you, there.
So you mentioned we did the thinking, mindfulness of thinking last time, and you asked us to think about our relationship with our thoughts.
Yeah.
And so suppose one discovers that one's thought patterns might be not that constructive. So I become aware of this.
Uh-huh.
So then, is the goal, maybe that's not the right word, but sort of like, what do you do once you discover this? Do you try to replace those thoughts with other thoughts? Or I'm just wondering what happens next.
Yeah. Sometimes it's useful to see your thoughts, they're not useful, and just change the direction, think some another way. That can be done wisely. But to do that too quickly and too much, it's too easy to kind of paper over. It's kind of like something deep is there and you're kind of pretending or kind of, it kind of becomes like a veneer rather than. And so one of the things we do is don't do much except know it's happening. And just see it, be mindful of it. So, oh, this is a unhealthy way of thinking. And then, and the task is to be friendly to that. Just allow it to be there, but don't believe it. But don't fight it, and don't try to fix it. And this idea of just being present for something in a simple way and not trying to make it better or make it go away is actually a very profound thing to do. And you'll learn it's a lot of power, a lot of freedom can find where we learn how to be with what is rather than needing what is to go away. So I would just be patient with it. And a lot of the wisdom comes naturally, a lot of the transformation naturally, because when you see things really clearly, you get to see it for a while. The other thing with recurrent thought patterns, you know, maybe unhealthy ways of thinking, is chances are that they have a deeper root, like a taproot. And usually that taproot has to do with emotions. And so sometimes it's useful to kind of start to feel your way and see, what's the emotion that underlies this particular thought train? And then to just bring a very kind attention to that underlying emotion. Again, not to fix it, just to be present for it. And what some people find, if they do that, then there's no need to have those thoughts. It kind of like, that's where the healing can happen, is that at the emotional level. Does that make sense?
Thanks, yeah, thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay.
I just want to commend you for the work you do.
Oh, thank you.
And this is the first class I've actually been to, but I've been listening online.
Uh-huh.
And it's pretty incredible because I feel the same being at home that I do here.
Uh-huh.
So it's amazing to me that online I could actually feel like I'm at class.
Mm.
So I've been meditating forever.
Yes.
And the difference is when I sit at home, I decide how long I want to do it for. And that quickly turns into stretch, qigong, tai chi after a while when I'm uncomfortable. So setting the timer has been miserable.
But really good.
Really good in that, as opposed to feelings, which are probably underneath all that, my mind will fixate on thoughts that don't sort of leave. And what's been good, you know, good, bad, right, is the sitting with it, hanging with it in the way you talk, and then sort of not getting attached to much of anything so that I can move free through that. So little things like take your time. And I'll think, I don't have time for taking my time. I have to meditate for 30 minutes. That's long. I already have a 2-hour practice, you know? So I'll sit and I'll go, but my hips don't open anymore the way I just plop down. So then I could be miserable in meditation for 20 of them.
Yeah.
And then I'll go, oh, maybe what he said of actually take your time is a good idea.
Yeah.
So that'll take me 10 minutes to get in. That means it's 40 minutes. But what I notice is when I do that, there's this eye on, oh, I've never given myself any time because it's never been about me. It's been about service for others.
Yeah.
So anyway, in that, it's been pretty amazing. Right.
That's
so
beautiful.
Thank you.
That's one. Thank you. So giving yourself time, it's actually a very profound thing to give yourself this kind of, you know, they have this expression nowadays of, you know, quality time. You want to spend quality time with someone. This is a way of spending quality time with yourself to do this and give yourself the time. And also it's a surprise to see what comes up. Sometimes if you give yourself quality time to really be with a friend, you discover who the friend is. if you're the friend, you may sometimes you discover who you are in ways that you can't if you're constantly doing things and involved. So the discipline of just sitting still, not even stretching or doing yoga when you feel uncomfortable, allows for this deeper meeting, deeper connection to yourself. Great, thank you. Okay, thank you. So, I thought we would do a meditation, and this will be a kind of review meditation to kind of bring together these different instructions. If you remember, the instructions kind of followed this sequence. First, it was the breath, mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of emotions, mindfulness of thinking. And we could cover some other areas, but the idea is this kind of covers everything. That's kind of the principle. So if something doesn't seem to fit into these categories, just doesn't matter, just pay attention to that. and the idea is, the general idea is that to use breathing, if it works for you, as your home base. Some people call it the anchor to the present moment. And so you would keep your attention there with the breathing. Breathing is calming, it's settling, it's a way of developing a capacity to be in the present moment. It's a way of cultivating a stronger mind of attention. But when something else becomes more compelling, then we let go of the breathing and we just attend to that what's more compelling. And compelling means it's obvious that it needs attention. So when there's a strong sensation in the body, then just let go of the breath and attend to that. If there's a strong sensation, emotion, just note that. If there's a strong bout of thinking, note that. And then when it feels like it's acknowledged well enough, then you come back to your breathing, continue with the breathing until the next thing arises. And that's the basic idea, because what we're trying to do is to be present for what is the most obvious thing in the moment and learn to have this kind of high-quality, friendly, little bit independent attention where we're not swept away or caught up in what we're aware of. So that's the general idea. So we'll do this. So if you take an alert but comfortable posture, and then gently close your eyes. And it's often useful to take a few moments at the beginning of meditation to have a routine that helps you to settle in and to arrive here and now. So one routine is to take a few long, slow, deep breaths, letting your chest expand, shoulders lift as you breathe in, and then as you exhale, to settle in, settle down into your body, relax. Breathing in deeply, relaxing and settling in. And then letting your breathing return to normal. It can also be helpful to scan through your body to soften and relax different places of your body. Maybe starting with the forehead and the eyes. Maybe as you exhale, softening. Softening the cheeks and the jaw. And a softening of the shoulders. Perhaps with the help of the pull of gravity, so the weight of the shoulders get help you to the shoulders sink a little bit. And to soften the belly. Let the belly hang forward and down. And if there's any ways in which you're bracing yourself with your body, perhaps you can let your body relax, be at ease. Just so you can sit here in the glow of your body. And then within your body, as part of your physical experience, become aware of how your body experiences breathing. Noticing the movements of the body as you breathe. Perhaps the movements of your belly or your chest. Or perhaps it's the sensations of the air moving in and out through your nostrils. Wherever it's most comfortable for you to be aware of breathing. And gently as you exhale, perhaps relaxing your thinking. Letting go of what you're thinking about. So you can better feel the experience of breathing. And if there are thoughts that arise and take you away, as soon as you notice that, let go and begin again with your breathing. Meditation has a lot to do with starting over and over again and again. And one of the really valuable abilities that we have is that simple ability to be aware, to notice and recognize what's happening as it's happening. And right now, awareness can be used to be aware of breathing, or to allow the experience of breathing to come into awareness. And then take a few moments now to switch from noticing breathing to calmly, openly become aware of the strongest sensation in your body. See if you can be aware of that in an open, relaxed way, as if it has permission to be there the way it is, and your job is to get to know it, to recognize it, to feel it, sense it. If it goes away as you're with it, go to the next strongest sensation of your body. If the sensation is challenging to be with, see if you can maybe open your awareness wider, so maybe it's easier to be with, or maybe step back from it a little bit, so you're being aware from a distance. And then calmly, deliberately, switch your attention back to your breathing. And the waves of breathing in and breathing out. See if you can ride those waves. Float on those waves as they come by. And now calmly switch your attention from breathing to how you're feeling, whatever emotions are here for you, mood or how you are. And see if you can calmly, simply, openly be aware of your emotion, state of mind. If it's a challenging emotion, maybe opening the awareness wider so there's more space to hold it. Or step back so you're aware of it from a little bit distance. And the idea is not to judge or fix or change, but rather to just know it as if it has permission to be there, and you're getting to know it better. The mind wanders off in thought. See if you can let go of your thoughts so you can better just be with the emotion. Switch your attention back to your breathing. Feeling the inhalation and settling back in with the exhalation to the rhythm of breathing. As you exhale, letting go of your thoughts. And now calmly switch your attention to be mindful of your thinking. If it goes away quickly, go back to your breathing until thinking arises again. But in an open awareness, notice thinking. And if it's easy enough, notice the emotion that might be underlying your thoughts. Letting awareness be open, as open it needs, as wide as it needs to be. And then switching the attention back to breathing. And perhaps feeling the breath from the inside, the sensations that come into play as you breathe in, the sensations that are there when you breathe out. And then switch your attention one more time. And this time switch your attention from breathing to notice if there's any strong desire, wanting, or even the kind of wanting that wants something to be different. In a very open awareness, not being for or against desire, notice if there's any desire or expectation or wanting that's operating as you're sitting here. And if there isn't, then come back to your breathing. If there is, just be present for that wanting, recognizing it, not necessarily believing it or involved in it, just seeing it. And then coming back to your breathing. And for just a few minutes here, 2-3 minutes, be with your breathing in a simple, direct way. But if anything arises that's compelling, it's more compelling than the breathing, experiment to see if you can have a calm, open awareness of the compelling phenomena. So then to end this meditation, you can take some long, slow, deep breaths. Feel a connection with your body, with the chair, cushion, the floor. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So what I didn't include in that, which I mentioned, I think maybe the second class, is sounds. So if sounds become compelling, they just become something else we bring our attention to. And as I have said also, this meditation practice, there's no distractions. There's nothing we consider distraction. It's just something else to pay attention to, bring attention to. And so if there's anything that you think doesn't fit what we've covered so far, it's not a distraction, just something else to bring attention to. And what we're trying to do, among other things, is to cultivate a kind of attention, a kind of way of being present, where we're kind of a little bit free from the experience. We're not caught up, we're not entangled, we're not judging, we're not for or against, but just there in a kind of simple way. And it can be such a relief, and it allows things to unwind, because a lot of the kind of way we get wound up is because of our reactions of wanting, not wanting, thoughts, all these things that we do. We don't just let things be. And so meditation, we let things be and just know them in awareness. The other thing is that as the practice deepens, we start seeing more and more clearly what's actually going on. And we start making very simple distinctions between, the whole kind of confusing kind of chaos of what our experience can be. And it can be useful sometimes to be able to tease apart an emotion from a thought, a body sensation from an emotion. Start seeing these different things as they operate. So they're all kind of big ball, kind of entangled, that we get pulled into. But it also becomes helpful to begin noticing the commentary we add on top. You know, if we see that we're making commentary about the experience, that commentary is not the experience. And if we're seeing the experience through the lens of the commentary, chances are we're seeing it in a biased way. And so, then we can say, this is commentary, let's go back to the direct experience. Commentary can include judgments. It also can include a whole host of complicated concepts and ideas we have about what things are. And we tend to overlay lots of ideas in our experience. And as in meditation, we get simpler and simpler, just staying with experience, learning what it's like to be with experience in simpler and simpler ways. Then we start developing wisdom about how the wisdom of direct experience and the wisdom of the difference between direct experience and the concepts. And why this is very important, I'll explain to you through a little show and tell. So I usually do this with flowers, but I forgot to bring flowers today. So I hold up this striker. You know, it's about 8 inches long. And so you see the striker, and I hold up the striker. It's just a striker. It's what it is. It's red and kind of dirty white. And you see it, and it's just a striker. It's its own thing, like this. Just. But then if I hold it up, this pen next to it, then something I can do something now that I couldn't do before. Now I can compare the two. And now the striker is the long object and the pen is the short object. You see that? So long and short. Now watch this. We'll do, with the help of my assistant, we'll do magic. Right in front of your eyes, you'll see how the hand trick is done. So this is the long one and this is the short one, right? Left hand long, right hand short. So I put down one, and if my assistant will give me that other striker there. Thank you. Now, which is the short one and which one's the long one? You see how that, wasn't that something? The magic. What was long before, suddenly in front of your eyes became short. This is the short one and this is the long one. Look. Now this one's the long one. It's the short. This is the short one. Long and short does not reside in the object. It resides in our mind that compares it to things. And we can compare it to different things at different times. And with the striker and these, pen and stuff, it's a pretty innocent comparison. But much of human suffering arises because we're doing comparative thinking. A lot of suffering around self, around ourselves, self-identity issues, lot of comparisons between people. You know, people, I'm too tall, I'm too short, I'm too this, I'm too that. My hair is too this compared to other people, it should be differently. And so we overlay these comparisons, not noticing that the comparison is a little bit arbitrary and doesn't reside in the object, you, for example. And it's possible to have an experience of oneself independent of all the comparative thoughts and ideas that we have. And that's one of the advantages of meditation, where you sit down and start separating out the ideas we have about ourselves versus the actual direct inner experience of being here. So if I sit here thinking I'm a loser, compared to what? You know, that's a complicated comparative thought. All kinds of, you know. But in the moment, the experience of just being here, there's no loser here, just body sensations and vitality and energy and thoughts and feeling, just kind of being present in a simple way. If you remember the exercise we did with the hand, the mindfulness of the hand, it's possible to feel the hand from the inside, just the sensations, and the hand by itself, in its sensations, doesn't care whether your fingernails are too long or too short. The hand just doesn't care. The hand is completely happy, vibrating and pulsing and feeling sensations without any reference to how short or long or how pretty your fingernails are. But if we look at our hand, it could be, oh my God, I shouldn't have let my fingernails grow so long. Here I'm sitting in front of all these people in a semi-public place, and this is rather embarrassing, and I bet no one else's fingernails is as dirty as mine today. And I better, you know, this is, you know, rather a problem. So I can get swept away in that world of comparison and concern what people think. But if I just allow the hand to be the hand, it's not a problem. The fingernails don't have a problem being long. Just, right? So this idea of sitting in meditation and just allowing yourself to be who you are, for some people is a phenomenal relief. And we learn to do this by learning to distinguish between the mind's tendency to have concepts and ideas, comparative thinking, and that experience doesn't depend on that. It's hard to stop having concepts and ideas, but you can stop believing it so strongly. You can start seeing it as one particular phenomena, that it's kind of an overlay that's kind of painted on top of your experience. Does that make some sense what I'm saying? You understand that? So as practice deepens, this is one example of some of the wisdom that arises. And at least in Buddhism, this practice that we're doing here, mindfulness, is meant to be a wisdom practice. And over time, there's a whole slew of wisdom understandings that will arise naturally from the practice itself. And from this very simple practice of just being present for what is, and start seeing more and more clearly what is, wisdom arises. Any questions about that? Or comments about it? Yes. If you could use the mic so everyone can hear.
The word insight, I guess, is closely linked to that wisdom, right? Like,
yes. Yeah, so insight meditation is closely connected to wisdom. Yes. So the words are almost synonymous. Mm-hmm. It's right back there, Hillary.
Yeah, it just reminded me of something that started happening this week. I often get these sort of memories of things that happened in the past that just sort of pop into my head, and there's like some emotion, usually not a good one. And then, but I guess I was able to a number of times sort of see it and sort of be interested in it. And then the memory would sort of open up a little bit, and I sort of had more awareness of what I was really remembering. And then I realized there's actually all these good attributes. It was actually not even a negative experience. It was just somehow that was what came through first, but, uh-huh. but there's all this other stuff.
Uh-huh. So you see, I saw it more clearly. Great. Very nice. Okay. So this practice of mindfulness, of bringing awareness to our present moment experience, and being able to hold attention in a non-reactive way to what's happening here and now, is an amazing tool, amazing thing that once you get the hang of it, it just deepens and deepens, or opens up, and it becomes, you know, a very, very rich world, a very amazing world to live in when we live in the world of awareness. I think of it as moving from a two-dimensional world to a three-dimensional world. It's like that dramatic, or a black and white world to a technicolor world. It's quite a shift to make. If you're a novice to it, it might seem like your world is getting smaller initially. And, you know, what's this thing about being in the present moment about? Like, it's kind of boring here. But over time, it actually opens up and becomes much more interesting than the alternatives. Now, when people who get interested in mindfulness and meditation, there are two primary ways of developing it further. And the first is to bring mindfulness into our daily life outside of formal meditation practice. So I'll talk about that first. And it's very rewarding to me as a teacher when someone comes to me and says, I'm appreciating the meditation, you know, I appreciate being mindful in meditation, but I don't want to just be mindful in meditation, I want to bring this to my daily life as well. And that's like music to my ears, because it's rather arbitrary, the line between meditation and outside of meditation. And the idea is to start bringing this mindfulness, this higher quality attention, into all aspects of our life. So outside of meditation, in daily life as well. And some people find that they actually benefit more from starting to pay more careful present moment attention to their daily life than they do in meditation itself. Start seeing more clearly what's going on. Recognizing their thoughts when they're having thoughts. Recognize emotions when they have emotions. Noticing what's going on in their body as they go about their life. There's a tremendous amount of information that we can tune into if we're in the present moment. And as we become aware of what's going on, we can make wiser choices. It can be something as simple as noticing that your posture is poor. You're kind of hunched over the computer or something like that, and your back is beginning to ache. But, you know, if you're kind of caught up in what you're doing on the computer, you don't even notice your posture. But if you have a habit of kind of noticing what's happening right now, then you'll catch yourself, your posture more earlier, and maybe you'll straighten out so you don't get stiff or sore from your posture. Or you might notice what you're feeling. You might notice your emotions when you're about to have a conversation. And you might notice that you're grumpy or irritated. And you say, oh, you know, when I'm irritated, I think I need to be careful when I talk. So you're a little bit more cautious when you talk. And so you find out you don't make a mistake and ruin a relationship. So you need to do that because you notice how you're feeling. Or you notice the kind of thoughts you have. And you notice you have a lot of negative thoughts about your coworker. And, you know, you didn't even know you had those thoughts. You just kind of, you know, went around sniping at them or something. But, oh, there's a negative thought. And you say, well, it's a negative thought, you know. That's maybe a comparative thought, or maybe I don't want to act on that or be careful. So, again, you're more careful of what you say. So, and one of the reasons to bring more mindfulness in daily life is that for a lot of people, it's in their daily life that they build up stress. And if you can be mindful as you go through your daily life, not only you might be able to relax some of that stress, but more importantly, you can track yourself, watch yourself enough to be able to catch the beginning of stress. Notice what are the things that begin to create stress for you, and then to relax. So it could be as simple as you're driving, and you have plenty of time to get where you're going, but it somehow seems to be built into your operating system that it's important to get wherever you're going fast. And so then you notice that when you drive that way, and there's a lot of people who are driving slower than you, and it's very stressful to be behind all these slow drivers and trying to kind of find your way around them. And you know, you can feel the tension in your body. It builds up over time, and your emotions and your head. And because you're paying attention, you notice the stress early. So it doesn't build up to a headache or something. And so then you could relax and settle back, and then perhaps you drive in a more relaxed way, and then you arrive where you're coming to in a more relaxed way. So you notice the beginning of it. So some things that people do, so some people just want to try to be mindful all the time in daily life. But that's too big of a jump. And what some people find very nice to do is to go find particular activities in daily life for a week at a time. And then for this activity, I'm going to do this activity mindfully. Try to be as present as I can, not get swept away in my thoughts. Just like in meditation, you come back to your breathing, let go of your thoughts, come back to your breathing. So in this activity, if I get swept away in my thoughts, I'm going to come back to the activity, come back to the activity. So it can be a very simple thing. It can be simple as washing the dishes. You know, for maybe once a day, stand by the sink and do your dishes as present and mindful as you can. So I'll tell you a story. There's one of the senior teachers in the West is a woman named Kamala Masters, who lives in Hawaii. And she was raising four kids as a single mom. And somehow, during that period, she managed to go away and do one of these insight meditation retreats with an Indian teacher named Manindra. And at the end of the retreat, this Indian teacher said, "Now that you've sat retreat, when you go home, it's important that you meditate every day." So she went up to him afterward and said, "I can't do that. The life I have with four kids," and she also worked. "So I have work, I have four kids, I can't meditate at home." And he said, "Oh no, everyone can meditate at home." And no. So she had enough kind of wherewithal. She said, "Okay, come and live with me for a while. Come and stay in my house for a week or something." So he did. And after a day of watching her, what she did, he said, "Oh, you're right. You can't meditate." You know, he was a celibate monk from India, right? So what did he know about that kind of life? And so then he said, "Okay, now I'm going to teach you how to be mindful in daily life." And so when she was doing dishes, he would stand next to her and support her as she brought her undivided attention just to do dishes. She was sweeping the house. Just sweep. You know, don't be thinking about something else. Just be really in that experience. And then she had a small hallway in her house. All the rooms were connected to that hallway. So if you wanted to go anywhere, you had to go through this hallway. And he told her, "Every time you step into this hallway, that's your meditation hall. That's your place for walking meditation. That's your temple. So when you step into that little hallway, just let yourself be fully present. Check in with yourself. Be mindful during that few seconds you're there." And so she would do that in the hallway. She was going back and forth all day long, right? So she had lots of opportunities. And the consequence of this was that for many years, while she was raising her kids, she could not go back on a meditation retreat. She was very diligent and cultivated and developed stronger and stronger capacity for mindfulness and presence. It made a big difference in her life. And then finally, her kids were grown up. And then she went on a retreat. And then on the retreat, her meditation went really deep, really fast. She was prepared. So practicing in everyday life is very rewarding. So some people choose different things. One week this, one week that. If you do that for 52 weeks of the year, 52 different activities, that's a lot of activities through your day, ordinary activities. And then you can, they start kind of like becomes a habit to bring attention to those. And they begin tying together all the different things you do during the day with a current or a thread through them all of being present and mindful. Showering, cooking, cleaning, shopping, driving. Some people will when they do this kind of practice, will take the parking space the furthest from their work. Not the closest, but the furthest. And then they'll do a walking meditation from their car to the place of work. And to get centered, to get stable, to kind of really be connected with themselves. I know other people who have used certain mindfulness, called kind of the mindfulness bells or mindfulness cues, that whenever this cue happens, they bring their attention to their to themselves and be mindful. So I used to do the telephone when it rang. And back when we had, you know, old phones. And I noticed in myself that I had a tendency to think that it was important to answer the phone on the fewest number of rings. Just I had to get there right away. But, you know, I didn't switch over to the answering machine for like 7 rings, right? But I had to get... So anyway, so what I started to do, every time the phone rang, I would close my eyes and just be present and check in with myself, be mindful. And I found that when I did that, then I had wiser conversations when I answered the phone because I knew where I was at. I knew how I felt, what I was thinking, what was going on. I found it really useful, so I used that as a cue. I've known people who have used light switches as cues. Every time they turn a light on and off, they take a moment to check in. What's going on here? What's going on here? I've also used door frames. So every time I walk through a door frame, I'm going into a new space, and so this is a good time to pay attention to what's going on. So I made it a habit to use door frames as a reminder, oh, pay attention here. Pay attention to what's going on. And, you know, don't do this as a duty, as an obligation. Don't do too much of it. But slowly over time, to strengthen your capacity for attention throughout the day, to strengthen the ability or to reinforce the ability not to be continually caught up in your thought streams, continually involved in whatever boat you happen to be on, but to kind of wake up and be present, step out of that boat and just be present for a moment. Do that over and over again. One of the benefits of doing this is that then when you go to meditate, it'll be easier to meditate. You'll have developed a muscle, a capacity, you probably won't be as stressed out, and so meditation becomes easier. And then over time, it becomes a reciprocal relationship where you meditate, it supports your practice in daily life, and in daily life, it supports your meditation, back and forth. So that's one way of developing this mindfulness practice further. The second way is to join the mindfulness practice with concentration. And this is the time-honored partner for mindfulness, is concentration. What concentration means is a mind that is calm, stabled, and focused. So the ability to stay focused. One thing to kind of be aware, oh, I'm thinking, or now I'm having a feeling in my body, sensation in my body, and to know it, and then the mind flits off into the next thing, it doesn't stay there. But to really be able to stay present for that experience and really get to know it well. I like to think of it as concentration. It's a little bit like having a tripod you put a telescope on. If you hold a telescope in your hand to look at the moon, it's really hard to kind of see the moon, and you know. But if you put it on a tripod, then it's stable and you can really focus on an object far away. So to have this mind that's stable and steady and focused, it allows you to be not so wobbly in what you're paying attention to and really stay present. Concentration also gives you a certain kind of strength where you're not so easily pulled into your thoughts and your reactions. It gives stability to the attention. So some people find that strengthening their capacity for concentration is a great support for mindfulness. One of the simplest ways that is taught in Buddhism for doing that is to use breath meditation, like the basic one I've taught you, but only do that for a while, for a month or a few months. Just only do breath. Don't do the other things that I taught you to do, you know, body, emotions, thoughts. Whatever else that goes on that might pull your attention, come back to your breathing. For concentration practices, everything but the breath is a distraction. And then we just let go of it and come back to the breath. Stay with the breath. Try to stay there. And slowly, if you do that in a relaxed, easygoing, no expectation way, then the ability to get steady, calm, and concentrated develops. And then at some point you switch back to mindfulness, and that supports you in the mindfulness practice. The other way to develop stronger concentration, bring it together with mindfulness, is one of the kind of strong characteristics of our particular insight meditation movement is meditation retreats. So we have here at IMC day-long retreats. You can come here for a day on Saturday and practice. You can come Wednesday morning. We call it a half-day retreat. You can go. We have a retreat center in Santa Cruz. You can go there for, you know, sometimes the 3-day retreats, 4-day retreats, 7-day retreats that we do. And these retreats are done in silence. I talk, the retreatants don't talk except take care of business, you know, little work that has to be done. The retreat has a schedule where we can give ourselves over to practicing mindfulness throughout the day in a very nice kind of rhythm through the day. And the continuity of practicing throughout the day over multiple days allows things to settle, allows us to meet ourselves, to work through some of the challenges we have, allows us to kind of develop stronger and stronger mindfulness and concentration. So we get a deeper and deeper connection to ourselves, and the mind and the practice gets stronger and stronger. And not a few people, many people I know, who have trouble doing a daily sitting practice, find they use going off on retreat as a jump start to kind of get back in the groove and make the habit of it. And in fact, today, we do a half-day retreat in the morning here at IMC every Wednesday morning. And this morning, there was a person who came explicitly for that purpose. He said he'd fallen off his meditation practice. He wanted to reestablish it. And he thought, well, if he came here and did the morning here, then he would have a strong connection again and be easier to go back to his daily life and continue practicing. So these are the kind of, these are the ways of kind of continuing to develop the practice outside of formal meditation, is to do it, the mindfulness meditation, is to do it in daily life and do it in together with concentration. Either do concentration practice for a while or go on a retreat. Any questions about that? Anything? So we're coming to the end now. So do you have any questions about anything I've said over these weeks or anything I've said just now? Anything you would like to ask?
I was wondering if there are kind of guidelines on words we can use to anchor ourselves. So if we're focusing on breath meditation, and previously you mentioned like in, out, I actually usually try to count to 10 and then reset and just, you know, focus. One is in and two is out.
Yeah.
Except for sometimes I found that's not enough. Like just in terms of, because the thoughts will come in. And so just, maybe more kind of stronger words that help you stay focused. So what I was using was recently was show up. I just needed to show up. But I just wanted to make sure that that's okay. And it's not actually just thoughts and distractions, but it's intentional words. And that's actually still okay as a part of cultivating practice versus, distractions.
Good question. Something. Yes. It can be very helpful to use very simple words, usually one word, but show up, I guess, is two, that helps you, support you, kind of stay present. The word you use in the mind should be like 5% of what you're doing, not 95. Some people get caught up in the words. But it's like a little whisper in the back of the mind that kind of nudges you to stay present, stay present. And it's, maybe I said this, it's also a way of using your thinking to help support you stay present. Because if you don't give your thinking something to do, an idle mind gets in trouble. You know, wanders off in thought. So it's kind of supporting your mind, supporting your practice to do that. And for concentration practice, the classic thing to do is to count the breath, 1 to 10. And if you lose count, go back to 1. And if you get to 32 before you realize you went over 10, just go back to 1. No comment, no judgment. Just always start at 1. And if it's a little bit too complicated to do that, I had a friend who studied Zen in Japan, and his teacher there taught him to count all the way up to 1 and then start over again. So you can make it simple. What I like to do sometimes, if my mind is really busy and agitated, spinning a lot, then I sit down to meditate and I can't really keep it focused because I keep getting off into my thoughts. One of the options that I will use is I'll say the word here, H-E-R-E. Not in the way you would talk to a dog, but just very kind of like open, like, oh, here. And then when I say here, then I get curious, then that's a cue for me. What is here? What's this experience right now? I don't direct it towards anything in particular. Just like, oh, what is this present moment experience? And then, you know, my mind goes off again. And then I do it again, here. And then I have this rhythm, here, here. And so if I do that for 5 or 10 minutes, after a while, something settles. And then I'm here. And then I stop doing it. Does that make sense? Yes.
I just tried a couple of times meditating while going on the bed before sleeping, just because I couldn't meditate in the evening or on that particular day. So it helped me actually calm down.
Great.
And but I fell asleep later. But until I was aware that I'm meditating, I felt good. So is that also considering as a part of, you know, meditation, which is...
Sure, absolutely. I think it's fine to do that. And some people find it very helpful to fall asleep if they meditate, as it helps them fall asleep. Some people find that it cultivates a habit of associating meditation with going to sleep. And so when you sit upright in regular meditation and you close your eyes, oh yeah, this is the time to go to sleep. So you'd be a little bit careful with that. But yes.
Thank you.
So it's all been clear? All these instructions? Clear enough? Or you're... And your own experience is clear? You have a sense of what to do and whatever comes up for you in meditation, that how to bring attention to that? Yes, oh, the front row here is really...
Yeah, this meditation in daily life, like whenever you're in the middle of some conversation and like you have all these emotions and thoughts rushing, I mean, we tend to like instinctively, you know, react to things, and you know, at that time, like if you become mindful of a current state, it's really in a mind is in a very complicated mode, right? At that time, so I found it like that time, just take a break and you know, meditate on your emotions and thoughts right at that time.
Yes,
I mean, if I do that, I've always felt like I have a much better understanding of, you know, where things are. And,
fantastic. You know. Yes, I agree. And it doesn't take long. And sometimes if you're taking 1 or 2 minutes, you know, every once in a while, and just being with yourself, sometimes stress can drop quickly.
Yeah.
Sometimes you find out where you're at. Yeah. And you can be wiser. You can take care of yourself.
I mean, I felt like drastic difference in just like 1 or 2 minutes,
you know,
where I was and how I was feeling, you know, just
really?
2 minutes ago compared to...
Yes, and so here's a little secret. Don't tell people. And that is that if you a great time to kind of do that, you know, 2, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, meditate, relax, check in, find out what's going on, is like when you're in social situations, a great way to do it is to excuse yourself because you need to go to the bathroom. No, very few people ask you what you're doing in the bathroom. And so you're going to meditate, you know, but, you know, they think whatever they think. And that can be very helpful. So in big, you know, complicated social functions, sometimes checking, going to the bathroom. We have to be again?
Okay. No. To answer your question, I don't really get it entirely. I understand all the words you're saying and all the words you're writing, and it seems very clear, but actually doing it, I'm not really very good at it. But I sense that a lot of people here have had experience with meditation before. And this is my first cut, so.
Yeah, I think there's brand new people here as well. So yes, what you said is right on. That's the my job is easy, you know, just provide the words, and to really make it personal and make it your own, understand how it actually operates for you in your particular circumstance in life and mind and heart and how that works. That's the real task. That's the real art of it, and you have to be one of the first things you learn to is patience, and think of it as a journey of discovery, journey of finding out what it means. And so hopefully some of these ideas will stay long enough that it supports you in your exploration of all this and your discovery.
Would you say that practice helps?
The practice helps.
You know, continuing to practice.
Yes. In fact, it's, yes, the continuous practice, keeping it up day after day or most days, week after week, month after month, it's phenomenal what will happen over a long period of time. But it can be very, many times it can be very incremental. And so don't assume that just because from today and from yesterday to today you don't see any progress, that, oh well, I might as well give it up. Sometimes you have to do it for many months, and sometimes so gradual you don't even see it. I liken it sometimes to in the hometown where I was born, it rained a lot. You know, it rains 360 days of the week, and the other of the year, and the other 5 days it was cloudy, and there would be often this kind of very light misty rain, and you'd go out to walk through the town, and you know, just a light mist. By the time you got to the other side of town, you were drenched. It would slowly kind of seep in. I also lived in Hawaii, and when I first got there, and the first time there was a rain, I ran for cover. But it didn't take long to realize in Hawaii you don't have to run for cover when it rains. You just keep walking because it's going to stop raining shortly, and then the hot heat's going to come out and you're going to dry out really quickly. So practicing every day is kind of like walking in the mist. You don't notice you're getting wet, but over time you'll get completely wet. So it takes a while to kind of build. You have to keep doing it. Another analogy I like for this is, I knew of a yoga teacher who, there's a yoga posture called a triangle, where you're kind of leaning with one hand, kind of trying to reach the floor. And what the teacher said was that if you can't reach the floor, get a telephone book, the old-fashioned telephone books that have, you know, very thin pages, right? But you get a whole bunch of them until you can touch the telephone books. And then every day, tear out one page. And, you know, it's incremental. It makes no difference, one page, right? But every day, and then, you know, maybe, you know, after a year or a couple of years, you're touching the floor. So some of this is very slow. Some of it can be very fast. And some people, it's so fast because what goes on, they can be a little bit confusing and disorienting. So, you know, strong emotions come in, that can also happen. And so there we have to sometimes be patient, sometimes just keep doing it and things will unfold and change on their own. We don't have to take so much responsibility for what happens if the practice is continuous. The practice takes care of itself if you keep doing it. It's remarkable. Many people think, like, it's up to me, I can't go meditate because I don't know what to do with all this stuff. You don't have to do much. Just stay present, stay present. So I saw another hand. Oh, there, yeah, please.
So you talked about desire and
yes.
Just being present with it and
yeah.
Getting to know it. So sometimes when you do that, it gets stronger.
Okay.
So is that okay, or is the idea to go deeper and try to detach yourself from the desire?
The idea in mindfulness practice is just to be present for what is and stay present, monitoring it, whatever direction it goes. Knowing there's only three options. It can get stronger, it can get weaker and go away, or it can stay the same. All three are okay. So some of you probably found that when I asked you to notice the desire, that some of your desires, if you noticed any, they get weakened or go away as soon as you notice them? Anybody? No one. They all got stronger? Anyway. So maybe one more, and then I have some more things to say. If you can use the mic, please.
I was just going to ask if you still have the continuous meditation practice.
Me?
After, no, in groups that I had heard about. So when you're done with this course, moving into...
Yes, yeah, okay, good, thank you.
Yep.
So the next 4 weeks here at IMC, Wednesday evening, we have a follow-up course called Beginner's Practice Group. And this is meant for those of you who would like to get more support, to get established in the practice and learn more about it, to keep coming back on the same night for the next 4 weeks. And some of the most senior practitioners here who teach quite a bit here will lead it. And I think usually two people who lead it. I forget, you know who it is? Yeah, I don't know who it is. Chris and? Sorry? Maybe it's Liz, yes. I don't know. Anyway, they're all great people and have done this before. And it's a little bit more informal than how it is with me and less intimidating than me, you know. They'll do some review. They'll give some a little bit more teachings and different aspects of this kind of practice. There'll be some guided meditation. There'll be lots of opportunities for discussion, for Q&A. It's kind of a relaxed, kind of mixed kind of presentation. So you're welcome to come back. It's great. And we have schedule here at IMC of meditation and activities throughout the week. And our newsletter has a schedule of all the different things. And pretty much everything we do here is, you're welcome to come anytime at all to any event that we have. And we're kind of, by design, kind of casual here. So you can just come as it works for you. You can leave when it works for you. You can come for part of a program and then leave. And, you know, it's relaxed. So people can come and go. And, we don't charge for anything, so no one asks you for anything when you come. Some people find it very nice to come here because they say it's one of the few places in public where nothing's asked of you. Some people just like the anonymity of it, and they sit in the back row back there. And there's people who come sit in the back row for years. I don't even notice them. And then they tell me, I've been coming here for 5 years. And really? But I really like coming because it's so nice to be alone. Other people find that they want to have more contact when they come. And it's not uncommon for some people who find it a little bit strange to come here because... there's no one really there we're very lucky to have Kate this time who greeted you when you came, but most events there's no greeter, and they're kind of, you know, people are either they talking with the people they already know, or they're kind of all kind of in a meditative kind of contemplative mode, and they're not looking around saying hello, and you know, who are these unfriendly people? But actually they're all friendly here, it's just kind of unusual place a little bit. But pretty quickly, within one or two times of coming, I think people understand what's going on, and it's the rules of other places don't apply here. It's a very different place. It's casual. It's easy to come and go, and people are friendly. And I think most people feel so. Come as you wish. Thursday evening is probably a little bit more suited for people who are new to practice because the meditation is usually 30 minutes long. Sunday morning, the second meditation Sunday morning is 35. Monday evening, it's 45 minutes. Tuesday morning, it's also a little bit short, isn't it? Tuesday morning? I think Tuesday morning, there's not so short. Wednesday morning, they're 45-minute sessions. Usually, there's not much, any guidance. There's silent meditation in most of our events, so people come and they just sit in quiet. Anyway, you're welcome to come. And we have all kinds of different kind of programs and series and different things, so you're always welcome to come if it works for you. And um, What else? Anything else? Yes.
First of all, I wanted to thank you for holding this class. I've found it enormously beneficial. I've been practicing for a long time, and I've noticed big improvements just over these last couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
For instance...
You hold it a little bit closer.
Oh, yeah. So, for instance, at work, I wouldn't always feel comfortable in every interaction. And I got my little gadget. I think I told you about my little gadget. So for everybody else, it measures your breathing and it tells, what your mind state is from that. So one of the things is, you're focused, you're calm, you're active, it counts your steps. So one of the things I noticed is that for the first time ever, so before, I would get 0 minutes of calm outside of meditation all day, every day, just no calm unless I was meditating. And I might get some tension during those conversations. Yeah. And so for the first time ever, I noticed I got calm during the conversation.
Mm.
So
you attribute that to the mindfulness?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, actually,
congratulations.
I would feel myself kind of maybe feeling a little bit of, anxiety.
Uh-huh.
And then in response to that, I would start breathing, and then that would lead to calm. And kind of naturally connecting and responding instead of this kind of having some idea. Well, I'm going to say this now. I don't know if that makes sense. But anyway. The question that I had was, I really liked the long and short example. It seems like there's a lot of juicy stuff in terms of understanding what we layer on top of reality and how that kind of keeps us from seeing something a little more whole.
Yes.
How do you have any advice about how to kind of chew on that going forward?
Oh. I think, I don't know if chew on it is the right thing to do, but rather notice it. Just start noticing different ways in which there's comparative thinking going on, so you kind of recognizing it more and more. It's all these different ways. If you feel that, for example, that say you like to play basketball, and you say, I'm a lousy basketball player, then you answer, you add to that, compared to who? Because if you're comparing yourself to who's a great basketball player these days? What? I don't. Huh?
Steph Curry.
Curry. Okay. So if you say you're lousy compared to Curry, who's going to feel sorry for you then? I mean, you could be pretty good, but but not good enough for the Lakers or whatever. And but if you said I'm a lousy basketball player, and someone says, well, compared to who? You say, compared to that 9-year-old down the street. then we get a little different sense, right? But it's always compare. So compare to what? And you might even just use that as a kind of mantra when you're finding yourself making statements about yourself. Compared to what? And that might highlight that you are doing a comparison. And it's not, sometimes it's useful to contrast and compare, it's necessary. Someone asks you to go get something, the big thing, then you're able to distinguish things, right? But there can be a lot of personal suffering when we compare ourselves. When I was, and so the, in the summer of 1967, those of you old enough to know this, that was a really important summer in California. But I spent that summer in Italy. I was 13 years old. And I'd been living in California before that. So in Italy, in this little provincial town in Italy, I was the coolest kid in town because I had the longest hair of any boy, and I was the only boy who had blue jeans. So this was radical. And so I was pretty proud of myself and kind of had a good vitality and, I was cool, right? But then I was gone the summer of 67, and I came back to California, and things changed a lot. And lo and behold, my hair was now among one of the shortest among the boys. And they'd figured out how to bleach and tear their jeans. And so I just had blue jeans. They had these great blue jeans that were all kind of torn and whitish, and you know, they, I don't know all the different things they did to their jeans. And I was no longer cool. And I would sit in class pulling my hair to try to make it go on longer. And my vitality, my sense of pride and how, you know, great I was, you know, like, oh, I was diminished. And, oh, no, it's kind of embarrassing to go to school even. All that had changed in me was I had flown across the Atlantic, come back to California, right? And now I was comparing myself to other people. And so it's very unfortunate when our vitality and sense of aliveness comes from comparing ourselves to others. And even when we feel good about ourselves and compares to others, it means someone else is put down. And when we feel bad about compared to others who are better than us, you know, it's also sad to do. It's much better to discover how to have a natural vitality and presence and joy that's not dependent on any comparison at all. So you can use that little mantra: compare to what? Compare to what? Or if you have, you know, a really good friend, you can ask them to do you the favor to, whenever they think it'd be helpful, to ask you that question: compare to what? Okay, so I think that anything that I should be saying, that those of you, Kate or Hillary, anything that has been left out at this juncture? The only thing I'll say about walking meditation, someone asked about it last week, and we're over now, but there's the handout. One of the handouts is a walking meditation, so you can read that if you want to learn about it. It's a great practice. And also, one of the nice things about walking meditation, it's closer to what we do in daily life, so it's easier to integrate the mindfulness in daily life if you learn how to do walking meditation. Okay, so thank you for coming. I hope this has been nice for all of you, and you're more than welcome to come back and be part of what we do here at IMC if you ever want to. And if you don't live close enough, it's very supportive and helpful in practice from time to time to go meditate with other people. So there's meditation groups all over these days, so maybe you can find one near where you live. And there's something about the support of being in the presence of other people meditating that gives you momentum and teaches something. So I hope you enjoy your meditation. Thank you.